Welcome to Full Potential, Thriving with Neurodiversities. I'm your host, Sarah Intonato. This podcast teaches parents of children with neurodiversities, such as autism, ADHD, learning disabilities, and beyond, to support their kids in reaching their full potential so that they can thrive, instead of letting stereotypes define them. My mission is to end suffering amongst these parents by giving them the tools to heal themselves, which in turn empowers them to be bold, confident advocates for their children. By addressing a variety of topics, such as well-being, advocacy, and spirituality, these parents stop being the victims of a broken system and instead succeed in providing their unique children with exactly what they need to thrive and share their gifts with the world. One by one, these families now change the world through their uniqueness instead of being victimized by it. Are you ready? Let's get started. Hello, hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast episode, where I'm thrilled to have Soma Mukhopadhyay, a repeat guest, here with us today, talking about not just what RPM, Rapid Prompt Method, is, but more of the nuances about it. Because one of the things I realized after our previous podcast episode is that people are really looking for more information about not only what this method is, but how it can help their child. And I'm going to introduce Soma in a moment because there's so many wonderful things to share about her. But I also wanted to say the reason I'm having her on is because I've encountered many families recently of non-speaking children who have been put in positions to feel like their child's not capable, or their child isn't able to learn, or they felt like they're having difficulty finding the right modality, the right environment for their child to actually thrive and show their intelligence and their brilliance. So this is one of the reasons why, selfishly, we're having this episode, is because I'm here to present you with tools that can help you help your child to thrive, no matter what their labels are that they're associated with their diagnosis or their education or anything. So Soma, thank you so much for coming on today. Soma Mukhopadhyay is the founder of Rapid Prompt Method, which is a method of learning and communication for individuals with autism and other needs, particularly those who have trouble communicating with language or verbally. Soma, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today. Is there anything that I left out that you'd like to add to your introduction?
No, this is fine. This is fine. Thank you for inviting me.
I will also say that not only is Soma a practitioner, but she's also a parent. And that's one of the reasons why so many parents out there have come to her for resources and for learning, because she's a mother who's been through this with a child who needed to learn different ways of learning and communicating. So I always like to share that as well, because many parents feel a little bit not distrustful, but that they can't relate to experts, and I'll use air quotes, who do their work, but then go home to their life of having a neurotypical child or a neurotypical parenting journey. So I like parents to know that she's right there with you in terms of understanding what your life is really like. So Soma, thank you so much for being here. I would love to start with, how do you like to explain what Rapid Prompt Method is? We've already covered that it's a method of learning and communication for those with limited verbal ability, but many people, when they watch someone do it with a student, notice that it incorporates a letter board for spelling out words, but in actuality, there's a lot to it that people may not see from the outside. So I was wondering if you could start by sharing how it works.
See, it is a method of to empower the student, a means to express learning, reasoning, and then understanding and thoughts by identifying the open learning channel of that student at that instant. Now, here it is a little tricky, because only through identifying the open learning channel, the pathway of implementation would be different, because each child would have a different set of open learning channels. Some would be tactilely busy. Some would be have excitatory tactile. And so excitatory tactile would have a language of its own. And then how to interrupt that language that, oh, okay, I'm enjoying this. That is the kind of a language that the student is going to have. So how to interrupt that language and still continue teaching, that is the that right kind of pathway the teacher has to set up through implementation. So that's why what will work with one student may work a little differently. So the teacher has to adapt the pathway for another student.
Yeah. And for someone who's never heard the terms excitatory tactile before, could you explain what that would look like if a student had that quality?
So a student who is sensorially idle is going to engage himself with a kind of a self-stimulatory activity, which we call as STIM. So now the STIM can be calming. It can start calming, but depending upon how involved the student is. So if the involvement becomes beyond a certain level where the student is only involved in that at an ignoring the rest of the stimulations, then we call it excitatory. Otherwise, it is calming.
I'm so glad that you said this, because so often in different types of educational settings, I work with parents who've been told, oh, your child can't learn because they're so distracted by maybe stimming with a pencil or flicking a piece of paper. And the parents almost feel like there's no solution when they're told a statement like that. And so in essence, what you're saying is that you just have to find a way to engage the student in a different fashion so that that stimulus is not needed or not as appealing because they're attending to something else. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Or include the STIM in the lesson. So suppose the student is engaging in some kind of a tactile STIM or maybe a kinesthetic STIM by rocking, some kind of a thing, then include it. See, now you are rocking. That's a kind of movement. Let's spell movement. So that way, that right. STIM is not just a pure activity, but it also becomes meaningful as a kind of a language expression where the student says rocking and what are the other things that sway, branches, yes, and all kinds of things.
I love that, because in essence, you're calling out the pink elephant in the room. And I think so many people will try to stop the student from doing that or label them as being wrong for doing that. And you're sort of saying, oh, hey, I noticed that you're doing that. Let's then change the direction so that we can keep going and not let this become an obstacle.
Yes.
So
yes.
Powerful. And I know that in essence, what we're talking about now is not just the letter board and spelling words to communicate, which of course is important, but moving your body, engaging the learning channels in a way that allows a student to learn. Essentially, it sounds like you're proposing to move past the letter board and almost create a roadmap for individuals who not only can spell or are learning to spell, but to develop other things. For example, if someone has that tactile need, maybe to develop handwriting, or another student who might have a verbal need to develop speaking. And I know that this is something you've done with your own son, Tito, and helped him to develop speech. I was wondering if you could share about that process of using the letter board as a jumping off point to something else.
Yeah, see, beyond a point. So you see that letterboard spelling, the student already did that. The student wants something more. See, RPM has four objectives. We have the cognitive objectives. Of course, we have to learn.
Yeah.
And then we have the skill objective. Now, the skill objective may be either spelling, handwriting. See, this is where the student has to evolve. The skill objectives. Then why not speech? Because speech is also a kind of a jaw movement, mm-hmm, and movement of many things over here, speech and like a kind of breathing out movement, because when we are talking, we have to breathe out. So allowing the student to use that breathing and the movement of the jaws, the student is already moving the jaws while chewing. Okay, now the rest of the head, the skull isn't moving, only the jaws are moving, to show them that this jaw has to move, and then we breathe out, and from there the kind of a sound, evolving the sound. So those kinds of little things over here, you grow based on the student's needs. So skill objectives is one, tolerance objective. So a student may only tolerate one letter at a time. Then the student will start tolerating spelling the full word. From there, the student is going to tolerate a paragraph level answer and then beyond. So you grow the tolerance of the student also, the performance tolerance. And then you also grow the, and then communication, because you want to know the opinion. Communication is a big part. So communication will evolve from the lessons. For example, the sky is blue. Do you like blue color? The student can either express the opinion in a simple way, yes or no, or grow into what sort of blue would you like? Would you like royal blue, like sky blue? And all kinds of things we can know based on the student's opinion about that.
I think this is so exciting. Yeah, because essentially you're saying you start where you start, and you may not have a student who has a lot of bodily control just yet, or a student who has a lot of control over self-regulating or managing their own stimulatory needs, but that's okay. You just start where you are, and the tolerance will grow as you progress.
Yes.
But it doesn't grow because you're telling them, oh, this is wrong, don't do this, don't do that. You are allowing them what they need.
Yes. And then again, skill objective is a little tricky, because the ripening or cooking clock, like say some flowering plants, they flower quickly. Some flowering plants take longer time to flower, like same with the cooking. So sometimes the sensory system has to cook. If each student is a kind of a different cooking system over here, and where the sensory system is cooking, so one student can achieve that goal faster than another student. But then you just have to, as teacher, we just have to create this kind of a sensory and cognitive, you can say, like ingredients. So the sensory system keeps cooking.
I think that's a really important point, because, for example, many non-speakers are given an option of an AAC device, and some students take to it very quickly, and some students don't like it. They don't want to engage in it, and maybe it's the sound that's difficult for them, or the tactile sense. There's so many components that could be challenging. And what we want parents to know is it's not an all or nothing thing, whether it's an AAC device or a letter board or an activity. You start where you start, and you build the tolerance as you go. And so often I think people approach these types of things with an all or nothing mentality. And really, it's not about that at all. It's about building that incremental improvement day after day, just doing these very, sometimes very basic things, but finding the right recipe, essentially, for the student. So on that note, there are some students who might not be able to live up to what are called the standards of letterboard communication. I was wondering if you could define what are the standards of letterboard communication for the audience.
Well, depending upon where the student is at. Now, if you look at the organizations of these letters, you see they are in a kind of a graphical order. See? So you have the x-axis and y-axis. So you can start with just holding it like this. So we are going to do a story. So we are going to do, what are we going to do? Let's try and spell story. Let's find, so that this, you start like this based on the student's ability. So we are working only on one movement over here, the M movement. And then, because in order to reach all these letters, you need all these joints to move in sync.
Right.
And touch the letter to spell. So then slowly you show the field of two, And then some students, they adapt to stencils, and some students may reject the stencil, depending on what, because the student's sensory systems either accepts a system or rejects a system. Mm-hmm. If the student's sensory system rejects the stencil, we always start with the rolled up letterboard, which any parent can start right away today.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, because you have to start somewhere in order to reach there, because it's not kind of the wish is not going to take you there. Activity, like you have to start walking the road. And yeah, that's where it starts. So then, as you said, that evolving the skills. So I found that the navigating the two-dimensional surface over here was not enough for many students.
The whole letterboard, you mean, for people who are just...
Yeah, the two-dimensional, or typing over here, because typing and communication, I found a big difference when what the student is communicating and what the student is living. So the student is communicating. So the student is communicating, I want to do this, or I want to change. I want to change the behavior, but then they don't have the pathway to change. Because right. So a student who has grew this kind of a kinesthetic habit of pulling someone's hair. So as a kind, it may seem like a kind, people may call it a behavior, but it can become a kind of an impulsive habit, that because there was no other, without any option, the student may want to hold the pencil, but the student can't hold the pencil. So, but the hair was easily accessible, the student grabbed.
Right.
And now, so that is when I realized, we have to give other options to the student. So we have to develop a program using using the flat surface of the letterboard handwriting skill, or something to engage the hands, because without any other engagement, the student has no other option but to pull the hair.
Right.
So then hobby development. So we began the hobby development and other kinds of things, because we want the student to have other options to use his hands. So a student may know, okay, I know how to pull the hair, but I don't know how to unpull it, because unpulling is also a motor skill.
Right.
See, so now without the pathway, you can say, let go. But then the student may say, okay, how do I let go?
Right.
Because even letting go has a how to.
Yes.
Right. See, so it's not about, so these are the little details that look for, so that the student can live up. So if the student says, I want to get rid of the habit. Okay. So then, okay, I want to get rid of the habit. Now what? So we have, as teachers and parents, we have to create a pathway. How to? How to help the student get rid of the habit.
And if you had a student who wasn't able to communicate openly yet, who was, say, grabbing the hair, but didn't yet have the pathway to let go, how would you address that? Because I know every way of behaving is communicating something. Yeah.
How I would address. See, as I said, presume competence is important. So I would give two choices. Now, do you want me to help you? Yes. Or no?
Yeah.
So start over there.
Yeah.
Help you in what? Help you to learn the skill of undoing your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can start the communication even with yes and no and two choices. Yeah. It doesn't have to be the whole sentence level letterboard, because the student may have the words, but the student may not have the ability or the tolerance to spell out everything. Because in order to accurately spell over here, you would need the visual skills.
Yeah.
You would need the kind of a visual stamina, the perfect stamina to spell all that.
I love that you brought that up, because that was my son. He had the words, he had it all in his head, and he had only, in his history been spelling very small words in his school setting. And so when a longer word or a more expressive word came up, he was very timid. He would get the first letter or two, and then he would sort of hang back, because he didn't have the endurance yet. He didn't have the motor planning yet to finish spelling the long words. And he's come such a long way in 1.5 years of just practicing every day at home with me. But what I want parents to know is that don't listen to this episode and think, oh, well, that's for people who already know how to spell all their words. No, just like Soma mentioned, you can start with yes and no, Y and N, if your child can't even have the full visual tolerance yet, and start where you start and make those pathways slowly grow. So is there anything more that you want to share on that topic? Because I think it's so layered.
Yes. And one more thing is that people are so heavy. I've seen everyone talking about apraxia.
Mm.
Now, it's so overrated. Mm. Now, so here I'm talking about, I don't want to displease or create any argument, but people are missing on a big part on this word. Aphantasia. Aphantasia. Now, what is this? Now, aphantasia is when I'm not seeing the visual picture.
Mm.
So I can say, I want to go to the beach.
Yeah.
I immediately see a visual picture right away.
Yeah.
So if I see, because what the student is seeing may be very different. So the student is idealistically saying that I want to go to the store from today. So a student who is sort of avoiding stores or crowded places may say, I want to try. But now, in order to try, you have to see a visual picture. Even if I say, I want to go to Mars, I still see a visual picture somewhere, whatever right. I say. So our words and our pictures, they are matching because we have created this kind of a sensory system from the very beginning in order to survive, because we did not survive with sensory help. A typical student does not survive with sensory help so much as an autistic person. Yeah. So an autistic person is sensorily helped so much from the very beginning that, and the visual channel, see, during our growing up period, the visual channel is the last to develop.
Mm.
So even a little baby doesn't see the shapes and other things that clearly, the rods and cones, they develop later. So they see a blurred world and slowly. So in this kind of a developmental stage, sometimes we don't see. Now, it's not that for all autistic children, it's with many of these autistic children who are like visually, you can say visually, they need a lot of help.
Yeah.
Right. So this is where I'm talking about like selective vision. That's why they go towards selective vision, just watching whatever they want to watch, or they go into a kind of a global vision where the visual vision is not targeting anywhere. So you see, along with this, aphantasia develops because of the lack of visual image forming. So I can say over here, I want to teach the world that I'm smart.
Yeah.
Okay, now you're not getting the visual image of that, how big the world is, how controversial the world is, and how uninterested the world is. Because see, if someone tells, okay, who is crazy about mathematics, I want to teach the world the importance of set theory. I would say, why would I want to learn? So the world, there would be a group of people in the world, they would say, well, I'm not interested in learning about autism. Mm-hmm. So then you make all these statements like, I want the world to believe, because you're not getting the kind of a visual image of how widely distributed the world opinions are. See, yeah. So the goals that children lay over here, be it smaller goals, so you can say a smaller goal means the goals that are not as big as want to teach the world. The goals may be, okay, I want to do learn algebra. But, okay, now algebra, if you look at 6x cubed plus 3x squared y plus 4y squared times 8x cubed y cubed plus 7x. Okay. Now, do you know how much visual tolerance you'll need to solve this? So the student may say, I love algebra, but they may not see themselves seeing a problem mm-hmm. like this and visually looking at the like the visual nature of this that this problem requires.
Right.
Like a visual student can solve it right away. But for a student who is not visual, it would become a big visual stress. And this problem may take 15 to 20 minutes to solve.
Right. And when someone is under stress because their tolerance has not yet been built, that's when you might see the tendencies of avoidance or certain nervousness come out because they're thinking, I can't do this. I can't keep up with that.
Yes. See, that's where the aphantasia comes. Okay. So someone may say, okay, I will write a book. Mm-hmm. But to write a book, you have to grow that kind of a stamina to begin and then get back to the same chapter. And sometimes it can become the editing part would become boring. And then finding the publisher would become another kind of a roadmap to go.
Yeah.
See, so this is where you see that the goals that this because of this aphantasia. Okay, now, so let's look at another goal. Like a student spells out, I will touch my head. But if the student is not getting a visual map of his own body, then the student is just going to be spelling and not living up to what the student spelled.
Yeah.
See? So here we also, and now apraxia is again, it follows actually aphantasia.
Mm.
Because see, a student is not having apraxia when the student is picking up the food and eating.
Right.
See, so then it's all working. The motor skills are so good. When a student is maybe indulged in a kind of a fine motor skill of pinching someone, then the apraxia is not working. But only when it comes to something else, because, you know, experience is so important. And what kind of experience are we talking about? We are talking about sensory experience.
Yeah.
Because if the student is not sensory experienced, the student won't get the right kind of visual image of whether he'll be able to do it or not.
Yeah.
And so the spelling would become so idealistic, like we are important. We want to tell everyone we are smart. So you'll see the generic kind of things are coming back and back, and everyone is telling the same thing because then my mind and body, they are not matching. But when you are eating, your mind and body is matching.
Right.
When you are playing on the park, when you are heading for the swing, then your mind and body is matching. So it's not exactly separate over here.
Right. Yeah, that's very powerful.
That's why I want to tell this aphantasia, because I'm hearing everywhere mind body is not matching, apraxia and all kinds of things, but aphantasia leads to apraxia.
It makes so much sense. And I imagine that as you've seen so many different types of students over the years, that this method RPM has evolved and developed quite a bit. Because in the beginning, it was you with your own child. And then as you saw more and more students, I imagine you saw quite a variety of different things that needed a solution.
Oh, that's my goal. I want to evolve myself with the students. Because as the student grows and grows in skill and their needs over there to try out different things, to experience different things.
Yeah.
So I, as a teacher, want to create the pathway and grow with them.
It also sounds to me like it's a much more integrative approach. And I, as a parent, always look at my child and I think, I want him to be a whole child. I don't just want him to be a child who can sit in his favorite chair and communicate with his favorite people around with no noise, you know, or anything. I want him to be able to go to the school dance, you know, or to interact at a family holiday and still have enough ability to regulate and have the tolerance to communicate in those types of settings. So I imagine as you evolve and this method evolves, the student evolves to a place where their abilities grow and change beyond what their families have ever been told is possible.
Yes, like instead of telling, so for me as a parent, if my son would say that it is hard to do that, then as a parent, I would say, okay, let's see how not to make it hard. Because, you know, it's so easy to say it is hard.
Yeah.
But okay, how not to go here, to go there, then what would happen is he would become the prisoner of all the different hard things that are around him. So this way, I want to make his life easier and create a pathway how not to make it hard. So that is where RPM is, not just the student just spelling out it is hard, mind-body disconnect, not like that. Mm-hmm. Let's see what are the things, what are the steps we can do to help. Because that shouldn't be the final answer, that because my mind-body is disconnected, that's why I can't do that.
I also think that's a good life lesson. You know, you and I, as neurotypical adults, have to do things that are hard sometimes. And I always look at my child and I think, you know, it's real life to have to look at something that's hard and think, well, how could I make this easier? Because I still have to do the laundry, or I still have to, you know, go to the store. And even if they feel hard, that doesn't mean we want to run away and never do it. We have to look at how can we crack it open and make it doable, even if it's the tiniest step in the right direction today. Those tiny steps are cumulative, yes, and they result in a really powerful change over time. And I think, to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this can be how RPM is different from other methods. Is that right? In that I know there are so many methods out there that parents can look at to support their children. And would you like to share more about how RPM is unique?
So RPM is unique because it has letterboard component, because I'm taking this letterboard as not just a communication tool over there. I'm looking at navigating a two-dimensional surface. I'm looking at it. Now in real life, we navigate a three-dimensional surface. Now how to jump from two-dimensional to three-dimensional? So I'm going to say, okay, the student says, I want to go and get the keys to make it more functional.
Yeah.
That is lying somewhere over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now how to make that happen in a three-dimensional surface? So the student can say, okay, it's my mind body is disconnected. So because someone told me apraxia, okay, it's good. So for me, I would say, okay, let's do the mapping. I would take a photograph, because now you have iPad. I would take a photograph of that three-dimensional surface, and I'll say, okay, where would you move? Okay, so the student can show, because it's on the three-dimensional surface of the iPad, that just like this will be also be a pointing scale. So the student will show back here. It's written more in my blue book on the motor skills. And then I would say, okay, so what would you make your body do? So I would break it into stages. So he would say, stand. Okay. Yeah. So here I will say, let's assist you to stand by doing a kind of a, because the student can stand on his own, but then at that moment, the student can't command himself to stand. Right. So then I would do a kind of a motor modeling. See, this is how we stand. Okay. Now you do it.
Yeah.
So then the student stands. Okay. Now where do you want to move? So let's get your body to move there, because the student can have a kind of a performance freeze at that moment. So I would help the student to move over there. And then let's pick up. Now let's practice this movement again. Now let's keep the keys over here and make your body. So what starts with our fingers, now we have to get a kind of a locomotion.
Yeah.
Which is more oriented towards a particular goal, not just let's walk on the park and just keep walking.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's a skill the student already has, walking in the park. But here it would be more purposeful over here. Now so that one day the parent can tell the student, can you fetch me a cup of water? Then the student can make his body go and fetch a cup of water.
Yeah. I always think of the example you gave of someone leading a baseball camp near your institute in Austin, and they just offered all of the kids with autism to come and be part of the baseball camp. And it didn't work because the kids got to the baseball field and they didn't have a clear role around what they were supposed to be doing. They didn't have the motor planning for it. And so someone asked, well, Soma, how would you have prepared them for the baseball camp? And you said, I would have taken a piece of paper, crumpled it up, made a little ball out of it, maybe taken a pen or a popsicle stick and had them hit the paper ball on the table to understand what they're supposed to do to hit the ball and yes. have them do that to start.
Yeah, because see, cognitive understanding, like cognitively, I can understand.
Yes.
But I can't understand how to get that cognitive message to make it. See, it's very different than the concept. So conceptually, the student knows what to do.
Right.
But to understand the body, the student does not understand his body because the student did not experience. The sensory experience isn't enough for that student. That's why the student has the like diagnosis of autism.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I remember when someone asked you what you would do and you said, well, I'd crumple up the paper, make a ball out of it. And I'd take the pen and use that as the bat. And we just hit it on the desk in the classroom or the table for a little while. And then we would stand up in the same room and take a little bat and practice hitting it in the room. And then we would maybe take that into a bigger room or outside and then yes. do that for a little bit. And then eventually we would get to the baseball field.
Yes, because see, the three-dimensional surface, it has distance, it has depth, it has like visual target, you have to visually target. So a student who is just looking at, does not yet have the visual target to look at the ball. See, conceptually, yeah. I'm telling the student is smart, the student understands. But experience-wise, it's a big sensory a field over there to understand. So they all looked cute. They all got the baseball gears, everything. But then the adults had to work hard to make them run. So the adults were playing.
Right. Right. And to me, this, in a nutshell, is what makes RPM so unique. It's not just about communicating words. It's not just about spelling words. It's about integrating the student's every need, building up every tolerance that they need to not just communicate and learn, but actually go out into the world and be functional and connect with themselves and with activities and with other people, because that's what they're capable of doing. And you've always, one of your cornerstones in your work has been presume competence. Assume these students are capable. And it's up to us as the practitioners and teachers to bring that to life. If the student knew how, automatically they would. But if they can't, how can we make it less hard? As yes, you yes. simply but beautifully said.
See, so in the beginning, when I was beginning, for me, letterboard was enough.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find the language, communicate the language, now implement it, experience. Yes. See, so now RPM has to evolve with the newer needs of the students.
Yeah. Amazing. Is there anything else that you would love people to know about RPM or anything that can empower them as parents or as students?
So I have seen that there's a lot of distraction. People are looking at communication in a very idealistic way.
Mm.
Okay, idealistic way is, wow, it is so good. But you know, how long can you live with, wow, it is so good? Mm. Because that state is going to wear off and then the reality will sink in. And again, you may go to a program where you see someone spelling out beautifully, or someone brought a typed out thing and the voice over there, because you don't know how the process of mm-hmm. typing went, how long did the student take to type out that speech.
Right.
Usually what happens, you see the end product.
Right.
But ask people about how the process is, because process is what you'll see the reality. Process will tell you the reality.
Yes.
So how long did it take? Let's see how long the student takes to spell out one sentence. So don't just look at the end product, look at the hardships behind it. And then you will know that the struggles that that student faced to spell that out.
All of my listeners know that I'm a yoga practitioner and teacher of over 20 years. And one of my most wise teachers that I've ever had, his name is Eddie Stern, and he's in New York City. He always says, yoga really begins when you hit a wall, when you wake up with back pain, or you're really tired, or you're recovering from the flu. That's when yoga really starts, because in the beginning, you have this honeymoon phase of you feel alive and you're moving your body and you have energy that you've never had before. And it's wonderful. Who doesn't want to practice their yoga when they feel like that? But when you wake up and you're not in the mood, or your child was awake all night, or your body hurts and you still do it anyway, that's when you really start the learning and the growth. And it sounds very much the same thing here. Look at the hardships and look at what can I do to make it less hard.
Yes. So I would suggest the parents to ask whenever they are over there, ask these kinds of questions. How long did it take? What are the challenges that the student had? And while spelling and all those different things, then they would know from the student's perspective, not just see the finished product. And then at the end of the day, always remember, you have a very autistic person to work with. Mm-hmm. And then how to make the thing that may make you feel good. So all these talk shows and other things may make you feel good. But the reality is you still have an autistic person to work with.
Yes, for sure. I think that that's really important, because I notice in my parenting journey that, you know, my son might enjoy watching YouTube and listening to music all day long, but that doesn't help him to stay regulated. And I notice when he's regulated and does activities or things that make him stay regulated and composed, he feels better about himself. He feels more confident. He can go out into the world and navigate it with joy and not with anxiety. And so I think there is that fine line of not just doing the things that feel easy, because those don't always help you in the long term. Looking at the things that feel hard, taking baby steps with those things, building the confidence, it gives the individual a sense of achievement, which allows them to go out into life and be proud of who they are and navigate it, because they've done something that was a challenge, the same way you and I do. And I can't emphasize that enough. You know, people like we'll always say things like, oh, but your son likes to watch this video, or he likes to listen to this music. Why don't you let him do it all day? Why do you make him sit at the table with you and do some activities that require him to focus and that are hard for him? And I say, because it's the same thing that I do in the morning when I get on my yoga mat. I encounter some things that are hard for me. I do my best. I stay focused. I take my time and I learn about myself in the process. And it's the same thing for him. And the result is so much more powerful than what he would get if he were just doing the things that are easy.
Yes, because the sensory system has to work. And teachers at using RPM, we have to get the sensory system working as well as the intellectual moving on, because that's where the lessons and history, geography, those things also come. Because in order to survive on this earth, we also have to be intellectually aware of what's going on.
Yes, absolutely. So powerful. It really shows me that it's communication, but it's really opening the door to life in such a powerful way. And that is such an enormous service to the community of families with autism who really need and value this method and your help. Soma, thank you so much for being the person that you are. Is there anything you'd like to share to wrap up?
No, this is good. And then we can do another one some other time. And then we can, as we learn more, we can.
And I know people will want to ask questions after listening to this. So we can always take questions. People are always welcome to email their questions. Yes. And we can always do that. Thank you. If today's show resonated with you, please leave a review through your favorite podcast provider, as it's an important step in allowing new listeners to find us when they need to hear this message in their own lives.